This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block in Washington, D.C.
I'm Robert Siegel.
I'm Michelle Norris, and we're in New Orleans this week.
In fact, Melissa, we're right next to the Mississippi River as we speak, on River Walk, a little bit south of the French Quarter. This was an area that was a staging ground for relief workers 6 months ago.
Now, of course, it's Mardi Gras week. Fat Tuesday is tomorrow. It's also just about exactly 6 months since the levees in New Orleans gave way and the city flooded. And Robert, let me ask you first, you've been to New Orleans four times since Hurricane Katrina. I wonder what strikes you this time that may be different from your previous trips.
Well, I'm struck increasingly by how people here have come to take a very clear view of what happened 6 months ago and how it's a view that may be different from the way other people elsewhere see it. They regard this not as a natural disaster, but as an unnatural one. Not so much as a flood as the failure of levees. They insist on this. They believe that the Army Corps of Engineers, the federal government, the Congress let them down, and they suffered for it, not because of a hurricane, but because of poor maintenance. And much flows from that. People here believe that the whole country and the federal government should be doing more to rebuild this city, and that there is nothing wrong with them all coming back to live, even in neighborhoods that were inundated.
Now, later this hour, we're going to be hearing from some people who live on a street that you've been following during your trips down there, Honeysuckle Lane in New Orleans East. Tell us a bit about that.
On Saturday, we gathered about a dozen residents of Honeysuckle Lane. It's home to about 25 families. And we brought them to a Vietnamese bakery, one of the few businesses that's actually up and running in that part of the city. Only, I think, three families are actually living on Honeysuckle Lane right now, a couple in trailers. We heard from them that very view of the disaster that I described to you, and much more. And I think you'll be interested in what they've experienced and what they've learned from those experiences of the past 6 months.
Okay, thank you, Robert. And now to Michelle Norris. Michelle, we're going to be hearing in just a moment from you scenes of contrast that you've found around New Orleans. I'm curious what common themes you're hearing from the people you talk to.
Well, you know, there are 500,000 residents of New Orleans, or at least there were before the storm hit, so there are 500,000 Katrina stories. But one thing we find that people have in common is a realization now 6 months out how difficult it's going to be to rebuild the city and rebuild their lives. At this point, they've done battle with the bank and with the insurance company and with the government, and they're starting to get a sense of whether their neighborhoods are going to be viable. And they realize also just what it's going to take to rebuild the city. The one thing that they do have in common is the sense that almost everyone seems to be in constant battle mode.
In battle mode, but at the same time, New Orleans right now is in full party mode.
Oh, yes. You see that along the streets here. You see these massive floats and revelers and marching bands parading down the streets that just a few months ago were filled with flood water. And you know, people, as you know, had very different feelings about Mardi Gras. Some thought that it was inappropriate for the city to throw this grand party at this time. But many people are here because they say that they needed to show that New Orleans is back, that New Orleans is still strong. And we were also told by many people that they felt that they needed to come out because they needed a bit of catharsis. They needed to go out and have a good time. And we certainly saw and heard that when we were further down the parade route, just a few blocks from here down Canal Street last night. New Orleans is always filled with bizarre images during Mardi Gras, costumes and masks, and grown men walking around with beads and feather boas. But this year, the surreal imagery stretches far beyond the Mardi Gras epicenter here near Canal Street. Throughout this scarred yet proud city, the eyes take in things that the mind cannot easily comprehend. If you've been here, as I have, when dead bodies floated for days in the streets, it's hard to believe that New Orleans is filled with revelers intent on having the time of their lives. The new New Orleans is a city of extreme paradox, a city where some have struck the payday of a lifetime, replacing roofs and rewiring homes. While thousands have lost everything they had, tens of thousands of homes may need to be demolished. It's a place that's always had its clear black-white divides, but the storm has created a new color matrix that spans race and class. The orange warning stickers attached to condemned homes, the bright blue tarps on damaged roofs all over the city. This is the palette of the disaster aftermath. And yet, in certain parts of the city, areas like the Garden District in Uptown, Katrina seems like it never even happened. Magazine Street is known as the Isle of Denial, a nod to the string of Tony stores such as Style Lab for Men, Wedding Bells, and a boutique called Petcetera. Here you can find rhinestone leashes and gourmet biscuits for Fido, or perhaps Fido, that's spelled F-I-D-E-A-U-X, since this is New Orleans, after all.
As long as you still have a dog that you care about.
Yeah, exactly.
You can still come and buy fun, cute things for your dog. Yeah.
By the luck of fate or topography, one neighborhood is back to sidewalk cafes and Saturday antiquing, while other once-thriving communities are down for the count, no resuscitation in sight. Travel across town, over the drawbridge that spans the Industrial Canal, and the vista could not be more different as you head into the lower Ninth Ward. It's an utter wasteland filled with more than 7,000 homes that were first pummeled by water and then saturated for days, so the houses virtually disintegrated like cereal left in a bowl of milk too long. The collapsing houses are too dangerous to even try to retrieve belongings, so the area is barren, except for an occasional curious driver and the grim clamor of crows. Amidst this devastation, we spot a woman in sweatpants standing on a corner, furiously gesturing across the street. Her name is Lucy Fleming. She's standing in front of what used to be her brother's home. It's gone. There's no sign of it, save for a few concrete blocks. In its place are two battered houses that must have floated here from somewhere else. Lucy Fleming has come back to snap this picture for her brother, now relocated to Fort Worth. He can't believe what she's described over the phone.
I'm like, it's not here, baby, it's not here. He said, well, take some pictures. I said, well, what you want me to take pictures of? It's nothing there. Well, go in the back and you're going to see this. I said, I see this, but the house is not here. I said, your rose bush is still there. The roots of the rose bush is still there. I know this is your house. He's like, well, where is the house? I don't know. It's not even much on the block. I don't see it. You're like, are you sure? I'm sure. It went over and over. You're like, mm-mm, it's there. I say, mm-mm, it's not there. I say, well, look, I'm going to call you back, all right? He say, well, just take some pictures for me. I say, all right, I'm going to take the pictures, but it's no house. It's unbelievable.
What did the house look like? What did your brother's house used to look like?
Beautiful. A beautiful home.
Beautiful. Home. Absolutely gorgeous.
Throughout New Orleans, even the most beautiful of homes carry the spray paint markings of Katrina, the crude lettering left by rescuers to note whether there were survivors or pets inside, or whether the home took on flood water, TFW. Those letters are everywhere. Those messages have given way to new signs that speak to a new economy. Advertisements are all over the place, tacked to phone poles and sprouting in mass on boulevards like spring crocus, mold inspection, demolitions for cheap. You point, we haul, just call this number. Signs of a city on a race to recovery. Recovery, however, is a relative term, especially when applied to people instead of real estate. And here, yet another paradox. 6 months after the storm, many in the city are still adrift, struggling to get on with their lives or even to get out of bed to face another day, while other storm victims have discovered that they were stronger than they ever knew. In the Treme neighborhood, we met Kevin McCusker, who seems to embody that never-say-die attitude. After fleeing the storm, McCusker is back, and he's eager to rebuild his stately home. In the local parlance, it's a Victorian over-under shotgun double.
I've got a wedding in May. There's going to be a wedding in this house in May, and that's it.
Now, you say there's going to be a wedding in this house, and right now we're looking at a house that's covered with that sort of green
insulation. Yeah,
insulation,
the siding's going up.
And there's a blue tarp up, and in the distance you can hear the guys working out front.
Well, we've got the electrical in because the storm tore it all up. We got the siding about half up. I'm telling you, I finally got this girl to say yes. I've set a date. I'm not letting it go.
How did you find the contractors? Because I understand it's difficult to find people to work on your house.
I'm doing it myself. I know how to swing a hammer. I know how to manage people. I've literally hired all the skills I needed from the street.
And how did you find them?
At first, it was Craigslist.
Craigslist, the internet site.
Mm-hmm. And then from there, it was a word of mouth and just being able to find work for people. Because there's a lot of people in town to work. Not all of them are legal.
So you put out basically an ad on Craigslist, and people responded from all over the country.
Like crazy. I mean, like, my phone was ringing nonstop. I finally had to remove the ad. And I tried to hire local people. I have had a few local people, but I got to be honest with you. They haven't worked out. And I would gladly hire another. In fact, one of the guys who's doing my stairs right now, he's a local guy. He's working out. But, I mean, I've hired probably 10 local guys, and they don't come to work. They don't want to do the work. They won't get on a ladder. You know, you can't get it done that way. You know?
Are these the new Orleans residents, the
Absolutely.
Folks that we see here, the folks
Absolutely.
That we see around Camp Street,
we can only
where the
hope
day
so,
laborers
right?
are?
We can only hope
are they
so.
Going to stay?
I hope so. I can tell you right now, I'll speak for about 30 Brazilians, and they're begging to stay. They love it here.
Brazilians? They came from Brazil to work on your house.
That's correct.
They saw this on Craigslist?
Oh, I don't know how they saw it. I don't speak Portuguese. But
I was going to say.
But they showed up one day. Somebody told them that I had work, and I did. And I put them to work.
This is the new economy.
You got to understand something. Before this, I had a mortgage company. My hands never looked like this. Never. I've lost 35
Kevin,
pounds.
You've got calluses. so you've got the calluses to show
but
for
you,
it.
But you got to understand. I mean, I pushed a pencil. I answered the phone. I worked my computer. But that's dead here.
So you're an example of someone who's found a new calling. You probably found reservoirs of strength you didn't even know you had.
That's questionable.
I imagine you also know people who've had almost the exact opposite response.
There's a lot of aimless people running around right now. And in my circle of friends and acquaintances, three people have committed suicide. It's driving a lot of people. It's making a lot of people crazy. That's why I try so hard not to be that pissed off guy. I got too many things to do, man. I got a 5-bedroom house and no babies yet. You know?
You're busy.
I'm working on it, man.
There's sharp-edged debate over whether this city should have hosted a Mardi Gras this year. On one side, critics say a party is ridiculous when New Orleans can't provide electricity to all its residents. Others maintain that the city needs the estimated $300 million in tourist spending, and the citizens, they say, need to release some steam. Count Kevin McCusker in that camp. He's taking a break from construction to celebrate Fat Tuesday, to try to remember what it was like to smile.